welcome to episode 14 of Widnes Rugby Chat with me, James Gordon. He's back by popular demand, Drew Derbyshire. Was it your second appearance last week, Drew?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah? And he went down.
And he like a little ball or something, James. Like,
oh, do you, back on like a memento. Yeah, yeah.
When people have a third appearance on soccer and they get a ball, but
I
don't know if the budget can stretch that far, especially in Widnes's case.
Well, yeah, well, we'll go on to that in a minute. But yeah, Drew was on last week as we discussed the Toulouse and Toronto games, and I saw quite a few positive comments. So I don't want to make it out as if you're only here because we can't get anyone better, Drew. But that is largely what's happened, because obviously we want to get some players on and some people involved with the administration side of the club, but of course, the ongoing issues, which we're going to touch upon in a moment, prevent that. So what we're just going to go through in today's episode, they're all following a similar format at the moment, is we'll look first and foremost at the financial issues related to the club after the club statement on Tuesday evening. We'll talk briefly about Toronto. I know Drew covered that game for Love Rugby League, and then we'll look ahead to this weekend's game against Sheffield. So unless you've been living under a rock for the past couple of days, you'll know that it's come out of the club that there are some financial problems and I quote, the potential threat of administration. I'll paraphrase the club statement a little bit. So it basically says that the board of directors and the senior staff have been trying to engage business leaders, and the board have also written off £370,000 worth of loans. A consortium of investors has been in talks for a few weeks, and that was hoped to result in a takeover, but a key member of the consortium has withdrawn from the process, and as a result, players and other employees of the club weren't paid on, well, today, Wednesday, as they were due to be. Efforts to secure investment remain ongoing, and we as in the club will continue to pursue all available avenues. Before we move on to what's happened since that statement, I suppose not a shock to those of us who know a lot about Widnes, but I guess further repercussions within the rugby league world, I suppose, Drew, of another club in financial problems.
Yeah, we've seen it so many times, haven't we? Especially over the last couple of years, especially with the clubs further down the leagues. Obviously, Widnes being in the Championship this year, but the club statement on Tuesday night, James, it was just confirming what we all knew anyway, really, because we all knew that there was massively in debt. We all knew that they owed the council a hell of a lot of money, and the club were just confirming that. Obviously, once the exclusive was put out there by Gary Carter, so the club were just confirming what everyone knew anyway. It's a sad state of affairs, James. I'm not even a Widnes fan or anything like that, but it's so sad because it's a club that's got so much history to it. It's got a great fan base as well. I'm not just saying it because I'm on this show. They've got a very passionate and loyal fan base. They get a few thousand through the gates. And what I think's more sadder than anything else is that they've had such a positive start to the season. Kieran Purtill's come in. He's done a fantastic job with recruitment wise, and he's built a philosophy at the club that players want to play for him. Everything seemed to be going great. Even after the Toronto game, there was still a positive feeling there, especially with the youngsters who played, Keenan Brown being the standout for me. And then it's just going, it's kind of one step forward and then it's two steps back, isn't it? For Widnes.
I know Kieran Purtle, I'm going to read through some tweets that I've had actually, which will stimulate this debate a little bit, but Kieran Purtle issued a tweet last night basically asking the fans to stick behind. It must be difficult for him because, of course, he went through it with Lee last season.
I bet he can't believe it, can he? And he's a good coach as well. It's not as though he's been the last resort type of coach at Lee and at Widnes. He's been the leading candidate for both roles, and he's just getting punished unfairly. How do you control the dressing room when you don't even know what's going on, James? That's what I want to know. How's Purtle? because there's only so many times you can tell the players just hang with us,
and it'll
be all right. There's only so many times that can happen, and even not just Pirtle as well. Obviously, Jack Owens went through it last season. And obviously, it's not just the players; it's the backroom staff, the media staff, the physios, everything like that at the club who aren't getting paid as well. It just creates a lot of uncertainty, doesn't it, and a lot of stress.
And I suppose the other thing with the players is that every player is different. Every player has his own worries off the field. You know, they might have kids, they might have mortgages, the majority of players might agree with sticking together, but there might be one or two who think, well, actually, I can't afford not to be getting paid, and then obviously there's the debate how many of this Widnes team would command a full time contract somewhere else, because of course a lot of the players have come through the club's academy.
Yeah, true, but let's face it, rugby league's not a well paid sport unless you're probably like one of the top three stars at each club in Super League. It's not very well paid, so. I doubt there are many players in that Widnes team who can go a couple of months without paying the bills and paying the mortgages, etc. Obviously, we'll probably come on to it in a little while, James, but the likes of Anthony Gellin and Chris Nenini, who you think would be the top two earners at Widnes, I'd be very surprised if they stay for the full season now, because clubs will come in and poach them if they need a particular position in the both centres. If they both need a centre spot, then I think a couple of clubs would be in.
And I suppose that's part of the issue is that, you know, Gellin being a good example is you can't command a transfer fee for him because everybody knows that the club's struggling. Yeah. So they might as well wait until the potential administration happens and then you can have him for free. But then the other point to note is, of course, if players don't get paid, technically the club's in breach of contract. So that means effectively players. I mean. There's probably a grey area around there somewhere.
I'm not being funny though. I don't know what Anthony Gellin's on, but for example, say he's on 80,000.
Well, the speculation was 100,000.
100,000. That's a lot of. But there's no guarantee of paying Gellin that because they just can't financially afford to pay Gellin that. And even if Chris Nenini is on 70,000 or something like that. They can't afford to pay just two players near enough £200,000, is there? So I think they're better off loading at the soonest opportunity, in my opinion. That's the only way to go.
Do you not think that would have an impact on what revenue you could raise? I mean, you'd imagine that they could sell more tickets and sell more whatever if, you know, we've seen the impact that Gellin's had. You're going to save. I mean, I suppose it depends on how you weigh it up. Is paying Anthony Gellin that amount of money going to enable you to sell enough tickets to cover that and some?
But £100,000, I don't think so. Yeah. I genuinely don't.
It'd be sad after the start of the season, but yeah, I mean.
And it's not just Gellin. Obviously, Gellin's the main one, but there'll be a few other higher earners in there who are probably on the brink of. That should I stay or should I go?
We've got a little bit of insight from there was a meeting today involving the players. We've got a little bit of insight on that, which we'll go to in a moment. But I think another point to make is that it sounds like you said this in the office before. Probably the most unlucky thing for Widnes is that London Broncos got promoted to Super League, isn't it? Because it makes, you know, we saw the difference in class between Toronto and Widnes last week. It's basically Toronto's to lose, isn't it? And that means it'll be tougher for Widnes to go up. I'm not saying that it would have been easy with London Broncos, but that's the perception that it would have been. And I've heard a few murmurings that effectively, after this year, Widnes would have to revert to part-time, which then means that Gellin's on a two-year deal, so he'd have to leave at the end of this year anyway.
Yeah, we was all stunned, wasn't we, last year when London won the £1 million game and gained promotion to Super League. Toronto should have gained promotion last season. Everyone knows it, and I think Toronto know it deep down, even though they probably won't admit it. The worst thing that could have happened, it, of course, is because obviously Widnes were staying full time this year, and if London, without disrespecting London, I think Toronto would have managed better in Super League this season. with both squads, looking at both squads and how they've assembled themselves. I think Toronto would have fared better in Super League than what London will. And obviously, being a full-time team just for this season, well, it's Toronto's to lose, as you mentioned, James. So I think if Toronto go up this year and Widnes goes to part-time, it makes it the job even more difficult.
I suppose you've just got to look, and I know Kieran Pearl said this in one of the interviews we had on the show, you've just got to look at London Broncos for inspiration, I suppose, and think, well, actually, you know, we might get turned over by Toronto a couple of times, but if we can turn up on that big day and pull off a result, then...
You look at London, though, and they're in a very healthy financial position because they've got a very good backer behind them, whereas Widnes haven't, and Widnes have got a bunch of lies, really. What's been fed to them? James Reel obviously said, I think it was a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago, that there was no debt at all, and then it comes out that there's near enough £500,000 owed to the council. So it's
a strange one. Well, I mean, we'll go back to that in a sec. While we're talking about Toronto, let's just go over the game last week. What did you make of it?
For the first half, I thought Widnes were very good. Injuries obviously told in the end, because Oliashaw Bot had to go off. He started on the wing, but then obviously it unsettled other players because Keenan Brandy, who's normally centre, had to be pushed out on the wing.
Christine went in the centre.
Yeah, and then Christine had to go in the centre. So there's a lot of shuffling. Adam Tangata, arguably Widnes's standout forward, well, best forward when they're all on the day. He came off the field. Danny Craven, the organiser, the one who really looked like doing something for the Vikings, he left the field with a concussion injury and failed to return. So them three injuries were massive, and they was all over the park if you look where they were spread out. So the injuries did play a massive part. I'm not just saying Widnes lost because of the injuries, because they did get pumped in the second half. They really got pumped in the second half. But a lot of positives can be taken out of that first half. I think, what was it?
It was 8-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, 8-0 at half time. And Widnes had a few chances. Yeah, they held up over Toronto's line a couple of times in that first half. The kicking game were very good. I was impressed with Craven.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Craven, obviously, he's so important to this team now, especially his kicking game, that when he's not there, you do wonder where the go forward is going to come from in terms of those last tackle players and making the yardage.
Because obviously Lyons is still only a young lad, so you can't just expect him to take on all that responsibility, even though at times he might have to. You can't just rely.
I thought Lyons, I think a good example of maybe Lyons is, I don't mean this as a criticism, you know, his inexperience was, Widnes had a really good chance, didn't they, in the first half where there'd been a break and Lyons ended up with the ball, and instead of going to his winger on his right, he tried a bit of an audacious pass to the left, and I think it was Harrison Hansen who knocked on at his feet as he tried to pick it up. You know, an example there, something to break down. I think
there were a couple of individual errors as well, which you can't...
Yeah, really, I mean, Ryan Ince was unfortunate with the kick, wasn't he? And I mean, there was a couple of decisions I thought that were a little bit suspect. The main one that stands out in my... Well, there was two, but I can't remember whether they were... I think someone said to me on Twitter the other day that they were a part of the same almost sequence of events. The one where Widnes knocked on and Toronto played advantage and Liam Hood stole the ball back, and then the referee went back to the knock-on. It was like, well, in my opinion, Higson, I think it was, he's ran 15, 20 yards. He's played advantage there. You can't just, you know, the free play rule's gone now. It's like, you've either played advantage or you've not. And in my opinion, they played advantage there. There was one, I think, before the first try of the Ince kick, the start of that set was a knock-on given against Widnes where there just wasn't a knock-on. I think a pass had broken down, one of them where you pass behind the man or something, and it broke down and someone's picked up at the feet and referee's given a knock-on, and you're like, well, where's that come from? I'm not saying that was the reason why Widnes lost, but I think a good example of how well Widnes did was the fact that Toronto kicked a penalty, because, I mean, you know, if Toronto were, you know, confident of a big win or whatever, or, you know, they would have played it, you know, and I think that perhaps showed a little bit of respect for what Widnes had done in the game, that Toronto kicked that penalty to go 8-0 before half time.
Yeah, it wasn't, but Widnes were hanging in there, and the defence was really good in that first half. I was so impressed with Widnes in that first half, because I genuinely thought Toronto would run away with it a little bit. I thought they'd dictate the game. They dictated the second half, but the first half were really, really good. obviously the injuries, obviously going into the second half, that reshuffled and it, and wouldn't it just run out of juice in the end. But going back to the individual tries and the errors and stuff like that, I think it was Andy Ackers' second try for Toronto, and I can't remember what score that put the Wolfpack ahead, but it was in the second half, and Lee Mudd went, the witness we're defending obviously, and Lee Mudd went down. It was with a head injury, or he had something in his eye, something like that. And it was just like jogging back, or very light jogging back though. It was going pretty slow, and it made me think. It goes back to this rule what we talk about: is it gamesmanship or should you just stay down? And because when it's a head injury, the player's got to stop straight away. And he tried running back, and you could tell like he had a head injury, and he was just running back. But that left a massive gap in the witness defence, and Ackers went straight through, scored from about 30 metres out, and you just think.
I think one point from the weekend is that I think it's obvious to everyone, and I think it was before the start in Toronto, obviously head and shoulders above everyone else, but I think it's a bit, you know, I saw some criticism of Widnes, but I mean, people have got to be realistic, haven't they? I think, you know, forgetting about the financial issues, you're looking at Toronto probably head and shoulders above everyone else, but Widnes, based on what we've seen so far, are probably a step above everybody else.
Yeah, they are. Witness, this is what I was coming back to before about the London going up last year was the worst thing that could happen, because if Toronto went in the championship, then it'd be Witness favourites by a mile, but it's Toronto favourites by a mile. Then a decent gap between them and Witness, and then another decent gap between Witness and Toulouse and Bradford and Featherstone and the likes. So it's a tough one, James, to be fair. I do feel for Widnes, because they've got the short straw again this time. But Toronto favourites by a mile, but Widnes can be positive about plenty of things, because I was really, really impressed with Keenan Brand. He was my standout Widnes player on Saturday, especially in that first half, because he was up against a couple of big men opposite him. Keenan's got a lot of flair, he's got a good step on him going forward. He mixes up with the big guys as well, even though he doesn't look big and he doesn't look muscly, he's still got a lot of time to develop, he's still a very young player. But it's good to see him come up, because he injured himself on his debut in the last year and he had a bit of a nightmare debut, so it's good to see him flourishing in this system, and it was good to see the Chapelle brothers in action as well.
So, you know, there's been some conversation about the strength of Widnes' squad, and we understand that there has maybe been one or two lone players that have potentially been talked about, but the financial issues have resulted in, you know, whether it's the RFL or anybody else saying that it wasn't possible. You know, what sort of areas do you think Widnes could do with a bit of strength?
Probably in the halves. Danny Richardson was one of them lone players that Widnes were trying to bring in, obviously. He's not gone on loan to Lee, but he's playing for Lee on dual registration while he's not getting in at Saints. I think Danny Richardson would have been a brilliant signing for the Vikings, because that's everything that, alongside Craven, and no disrespect to young Joe Lyons, because I think he's a good player, he has got potential, but Richardson's just got a bit more experience so far in his career. He's got a fantastic kicking game. He bosses the team around the park very well. And he's got a little Sean going him as well, so he's got a lot of good attacking traits, and I think he'll complement Danny Craven. But unfortunately, the RFL have blocked the.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things change. So we'll go back to this financial and the administration. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, you may have already seen this, but I wanted to mention. So I uncovered last week the size of the debt owed to Halton Borough Council. So this was via a Freedom of Information request that I submitted some time ago, actually. So the council confirmed that Widnes Sport Limited, which is the owners of the club, owe approximately £386,000, which is being repaid on a monthly payment plan. There's been a few disputes on Twitter I've seen of that figure may now have been reduced, but certainly as of last Thursday, I think it was... the council were telling me it was £386,000. I asked the council too about the impact of administration. They said that it would not be possible for them to assess the impact of that, and it would depend on many factors, including what the actions were taken by the administration. the administrator, of course. It wouldn't be the first time we'd disbanded the administration. They went into administration in 2007, shortly after the grand final, and were then bought out of administration. I also asked the council if they had any intention to help rescue the club if it was to enter administration. The council said they wasn't in a position to contribute financially to any rescue and has not done so. However, the council does support the club in their recent efforts to seek new ownership of the club, and a financial injection for the club from any new owners would be welcomed by the council, which obviously goes without saying. And
so could we see the resurrected bid from Mao and Kukash and Luke Backhouse, etc.?
Well, my understanding was obviously there was a consortium of people that had been, you know, that had been in talks with the council and with the club, and that wasn't Kukash or Backhouse or anyone like that. And I believe it was a name that has been linked in the past, Shea Sodhi, who has been linked in the past. I believe he was part of the consortium, and the speculation is that he was the key player that withdrew because of the debts that had been uncovered. I think, although the directors want to hand over their shares for nothing, it's, well, whose debt is it? Who's responsible for the debt? And to be honest, even if you were giving me something, you know, if I was giving you something for free, but it owed 500 grand, why should you pay it? Do you know what I mean? So, clearly, the club feels that it can sustain itself moving forward if it was debt-free. I think that's one key part. The Kukash involvement, I suppose people that I've spoke to maybe closer to me, closer than me to the situation, is that he's now probably at the point where he's probably waiting for it to go into administration, and he would certainly, I would imagine, well, he could well be an interested party should the club go into administration. Now, I still find administration unlikely, but you know, we'll see. The thing with the Kukash thing is obviously it's not really helped Salford, has it? You know,
no, it's not. It's not.
He wrote off £5 million, and like, you know, the thing is he's. He wrote off, was it 5 million, something like that?
Yeah.
But they're still struggling.
Mao Kukash, it's a difficult one. He seems to be an editor's dream, doesn't he? Because he says all the right things, but he doesn't put them words into action, it seems. Obviously, I don't even know if it was a year ago, James, when we was hearing all this Cumbria merger or Cumbria franchise team going to be brought into fruition. So, it seems like Marwan's got a lot of talk in him, but not much.
I mean, in the current climate as well, I mean, with all due respect, you know, obviously I support Widnes, but with all due respect to Widnes, if you wanted to build a super club that could compete at the top of Super League, you wouldn't base it in Widnes, would you? I mean, look, Toronto was there, and, you know, Cumbria might be a good option, Bradford might be a good option, you know, he always wanted the Manchester thing as well. So maybe that's part to play as well. We had a little bit of, we understand there was a meeting earlier on Wednesday, and I'm told it wasn't the best meeting, is one sort of comment I've had, but those involved seem hopeful that the finance problems were a very short-term issue that will be resolved in the next few days. So a little bit of hope coming out from that today. I wanted to read through some tweets that I had last night. Obviously, it was very active on Twitter on Tuesday night. And I'll start with this one. He's a bit further down the list, but because you mentioned it before, the 4,000 a week that Widnes get, the average crowd. Bring back Biffy on Twitter. He said, you'd think £4,000 per week plus the TV money, shirt sponsorship, board advertising, corporate, when you're paying the wages of the equivalent of a third division football team, should be enough to keep the wolf from the door. And I suppose in many ways, and that's, I suppose, what people would ask is, you know, you've got 4,000 crowd, you've got the Sky funded, you've got the parachute payment, you know, surely a club should be able to survive and sustain itself at that level.
Yeah, I agree. Completely.
So that was one comment. Bit of a negative one from John Low Photos here. He says the council could sell the land the stadium is on for housing, as they would get a lot more than the outstanding 380,000, so I don't think they need us that much.
That is very negative, isn't it? Does he want Widnes to play on like West Bank turf or something like that?
He might do. I mean, I would imagine that the idea of the council having the stadium is that they make a lot more money than what they would if they just sold it once. Because obviously, once you've sold it, that's
it's
it.
Gone, yeah.
You like this one? Crazy how 1 week of Aaron Ramsey's wage could save Widnes. What has sport become?
Well, he's not actually going to be on 400 grand a week, is he? It's, that's been found out to be untrue, but I understand where it's coming from. A lot of footballers' wages are ridiculous, and especially when you see them go into like leagues like China where they earn
It would be good though if someone from Widnes ended up getting a big contract somewhere, wouldn't it? Maybe they could give.
Maybe so.
Nicholas Muir, I believe, is a Toronto fan. He says, we were talking a bit about accounts and how this sort of thing happens. He said, I'd like to see a forensic audit of all the clubs done by independent auditors. Anybody skimming or cooking the books to face legal consequences?
A few free meals here and there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a bit, you know, obviously we don't...
I think
it raises an interesting issue between, obviously, a private business and sports club, because obviously sports clubs are run as private businesses, effectively, but sports clubs are probably different beasts, aren't they? Because fans feel like they, even though they don't, they feel like they have some sort of ownership or stakeholding in a club. And obviously the way private businesses run means they don't get that transparency, maybe, that they perhaps deserve. You know, and it's not just a Widnes issue, that's an issue across a lot of sports. And, you know, it makes you wonder sometimes whether sports clubs should be governed in a different way. You know, so whoever's the, you know, people use the word custodian of the club, whoever the custodian is of a club. And let's face it, the club's existed for 100 years, more than 100 years.
Well, look at Lee last season and everything that they went through with Derek Beaumont. Obviously, he was kind of the villain at the time, where when he said he was resigning from his post as owner of the club, everyone seemed to hate him when they loved him because he was pumping money, getting NRL players, Super League players left, right and centre for the league. Everyone loved him. They didn't achieve the dream of getting in that top four and making the middle eights, and then he pulled out, and then it was reported it was close to going into special measures, wasn't it? And they had two players left on the books with full-time contracts for remaining years. And they had to pay it off, but that kind of saved the club as well in many respects.
I think the thing is, it
all depends on how a club's managed.
Yeah, but I think the thing is that all this shows is that the money. It sounds daft because obviously you're in financial problem, but having a money man come in just gives you a false economy and doesn't help you longer term.
Marlon Kukash is a perfect example at Salford, where he said, "Oh, we'll bring Kevin Locke in, NRL superstar. We'll bring Randy Chase. We'll bring Gazoch. We'll bring all the star names to Salford." But you can't just throw money at it and expect it to happen. You can't.
And then the other thing is, when they stop throwing money at it, that's when you hit problems.
But you've got to build it from the backfield as well. Obviously, last time I was on the show, James, we praised the fan engagement. We praised everything that Widnes's marketing team is doing with the fans, and how they're incorporating it all together to be as one, which is fantastic. But Salford, when Marlon Kukash were there, they weren't doing anything like that. They didn't have any marketing ploys to attract new fans. And it was like, oh, we've got all these star names, but we just expect everyone from Manchester to turn up. And they weren't doing it. But Widnes are trying, aren't they?
Mm.
But it's quite the opposite in the background. Instead of pumping money, it's taking money, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of theories over what's happened. And obviously, you know, you've got this point where there was three of the directors were in salaried positions. I've seen a bit of criticism for Steve O'Connor, who was the saviour back in the day and was the chairman. Dave Scully said, Steve O'Connor should have stepped in and stopped the bad feeling between Brule and the fans. He should have sacked Bet sooner. Look at the relationship between fans and club now he's gone, and look at the difference Pirtle has made.
He shouldn't have sacked Bet.
He stood back, did nothing but let the club fail. I would agree. I mean, whatever your opinion on Betts is, he clearly wasn't the problem. And I think Betts was sacked probably by James Rule to deflect some attention from James Rule. Yeah. I think that's the bottom line, and I think that's obvious to anybody, you know, who's probably got a bit of sense, because why would they sack him when they did? Another tweet, Jeff Johnson says, I feel physically sick. We've got a multi-millionaire as an owner, for Christ's sake, and we're not paying player wages. The RFL have to make this rogue accountable. This is just not right. And I suppose, you know, as much as these are, you know, clubs are part of community, at the end of the day, players are staff and employees are staff just like anybody else, and you've got, you know, individuals who have obviously got the personal wealth to cover it, but won't, because obviously I'm not telling them what to do with the money, but ultimately, as owner of the club, surely he should be responsible for paying. You know, in sports clubs, again, we talk about how sports clubs were governed. A lot of, you know, I'm not using Widnes as an example here, but you see it like football, don't you, where clubs basically go out of business, the following day, the club's still running as normal, but under a different business, but all the people they owed money to are left out of pocket. And it's like, maybe there's a sports governance review that needs to happen. Matt Shaw, our esteemed colleague from Editor Rugby League World, he said he just read back a piece he did with James Rule back in April, which you mentioned before. He claimed the historic debt was cleared and the club's financial position was break-even. This was less than 10 months ago.
Smells funny, doesn't it, James?
Yeah, so we, you know, clearly, you know, I mean, I've been pretty vocal about this. Some of the statements that come out, you know, some of the stuff that's being said.
I remember the.
Everyone thinks everyone's stupid.
Yeah, it's like the little sham of a video that came out midway through the season, where it was like recorded on an iPhone camera, selfie camera, like just like we're doing now, James. Yeah. Saying everything's okay, just keep coming through gates, and it's.
No, and I think, I mean, the thing is as obviously Steve O'Connor's obviously a, you know, very successful businessman, and I've said before, I don't believe that Widnes will go into administration under his watch, because I don't think a businessman of his calibre would allow that to happen. But if you look at James Rule, he's not a businessman. He's a career CEO. He's managed to, you know, however, get the roles that he's got in rugby league, despite the things that he's done. And that's, I think, what's probably, you know, annoyed, you know, a lot of Widnes fans. I wanted to talk a little bit. We were trying to have a think last night about ways you could raise revenue. And one thing that came up is, of course, Widnes have beat the scrum on the front of the shirts. Now, if you took that off and that became available, surely that's something that you could sell pretty quickly. But having said that, if you were a company, would you put 30 grand in now, you know, not knowing what's going to happen, I suppose? But I think the point of that was the beat the scrum thing is another example of something that's not been very transparent. Obviously, we've seen the awards it's won, the community programs, but if you go on the beat the scrum website, you can't really see, you know, what is it, who owns it, who, you know, what is it part of? You know, you look at who's registered it, it's private. It's all a bit cloak and dagger for me. And Greg Pennington sent me an interesting tweet where he says, beat the scrum didn't have to be main shirt sponsor. It's public money awarded to Halton for an NHS project. The club delivered well on it, but there was no need to pin all hopes on the main sponsor. The money was awarded anyway. Now, for those that aren't aware, and I'm not saying this is the case in Widnes, my experience of other clubs is that you use these community programmes, can generate revenue, and then obviously part of that process is that you pay the pro team for exposure or for use of staff, etc, etc. Now, I don't know what's happened in Widnes' case, but I would assume that it's something along those lines, because that's quite commonplace between all clubs and foundations. Is that another example, maybe, then, of where Widnes have gone wrong?
100%, yeah. They should have just attracted a normal sponsor, in my opinion, because I think it's more profitable. I know they try and get the beat the scrum, so it's a good image for the club when they're getting all these awards. And I do respect the work they've done, because they have done a good job with the campaign, but it's not money, is it? It's not enough. They could have got far more money attracting a normal company or a local company sponsor.
And I think the thing with the community, projects is obviously there's a cost to delivering the community projects, which, you know, eats in. You know, it might be worth X amount a year, but it's being eaten in by every time someone's got to film a video or produce a video or whatever. That's eating into time. And then another thing is there's not been anything on it this season, so it's not been updated since about, you know, Chris Houston's still the face on the website. So it's like, well, what's happening? Because, you know, what it was the sponsor last season, and obviously it was serviced brilliantly. Well, is it still active? What's going on? So I think some questions to be asked there. Before we sign off, I'm going to talk about Sheffield this week. So quite an interesting one. Potential banana skin for Widnes, because you wouldn't have put Sheffield at home down. You would have put Sheffield at home probably as a win, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
a banker win. But Sheffield have won 3 out of 3. They've got some players with points to prove, including former Widnes halfback Anthony Thackeray. They'll now be looking at this thinking, we've got Widnes at a great time here. We've played them, we've won 3 in a row, and Widnes are in turmoil.
100%. I'd still back Widnes to come out on top, James, and that's with respect shown to Sheffield. They have started the season great. They did cause an upset last week against Bradford. They performed very, very well. Anthony Thackeray, as you just mentioned, he's been fantastic for the Eagles since he's gone there. I think he scored 4 tries in his debut or his second game. I can't remember which one exactly. So he's been in fine form for Sheffield. They've got a good team, haven't they, this season? It may be a little bit thin, but because it's still early on in the season, they'll still be relatively fresh, so they'll still be raring to go. you can't write Mark Aston off, can you? Because he's a fantastic coach. He does a lot with very little, doesn't he? Mark Aston at Sheffield. So you don't know what to expect with Sheffield half the time. But I'd still back Widnes definitely. But then again, you don't know what the players are feeling.
Yeah, what the mindset's going to be like.
You don't know what the players.
But then, having said that, I suppose going on the pitch, you'd like to think that going on the pitch distracts them from everything else that's going on.
100%, but you've still got it in the back of your mind where you're lacing your boots up and you think, might not go as hell for later today, because I don't know if I'll be here in a month or two months. I'd like to know what the players meet up after the statement was released, or was it told before the statement went out? That'd be very interesting. Or was it all on a group chat or something like that? It would be very interesting to see what their initial reactions were and going into training on Wednesday morning, James. Would have been very interesting because, as we mentioned before, what can Pirtle say apart from stay with us and stick by us? There's only so many times you can say that before it runs out, as it proved at Lee last season. He said, "Oh yeah, we'll tough it out. We'll get a couple of players in on loan. We'll sell our best players, make the money." But as time went on, it did okay at first, and then as time went on, it faded.
I suppose it's still very early doors, isn't it? I mean, yeah, okay, it's not nice not to be paid, but it's still day one of not being paid. Tomorrow's day two. Now, if you're paid a week's late, I suppose that's not too bad. I suppose the issue is if it keeps dragging on beyond that. So we'll see what happens. Drew, thanks for joining us again. Pleasure. Thanks for watching and listening wherever you watch it. Remember, we're on YouTube, Audio Boom, Spotify, iTunes, everything like that. Please do subscribe on any of those platforms. Give us a tweet. Give us a like. Put your comments and questions on, and we'll try and address them next week. But that's it from us for now. So see you next week.